Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, April 25th. I'm Ray Graff. Oh, it's that time of the year. The yard waste bags line the streets majestically. The trees bloom. You hope the lawnmower starts, or at least your neighbor's lawnmower starts. Well, it's gardening today on the program, and aren't we excited? Gardener Greg Ward is here of Ward's Nursery, and arborist Fred Breglia of Landis Arboretum. They are here to answer your questions and help make sure your yard is the envy of the neighborhood. If that's important to you, give us a call. 800-348-2551 is the number for a gardening question. 800-348-2551, or email us at voxpop@wamc.org. Again, the number 800-348-2551. Pour yourself a nice hot cup of warm tea and join us. Oh, hello. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Welcome back to the program. Ray Graff here, joining us to answer your gardening questions. We have a couple of familiar voices. Fred Breglia is director of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York. Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery, a lawn and garden resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. If you have a garden question, call us. 800-348-2551. Maybe it's about your lawn. Call us. 800-348-2551. Or you can email us at voxpop@wamc.org or tweet your questions at comments@wamcvoxpop. But again, the number, call us, 800-348-2551. Fred and Greg, welcome back to the show.
It's great to be here.
Yeah, it sure is.
You know, in the newsroom, we drink a lot of coffee. I'll be honest with you. Well, our Southern Adirondacks Bureau Chief, Lucas Willard, is down today, and he sat down and had a nice cup of worm tea. What is worm tea?
Worm tea, I don't know.
You don't know what worm tea is? No, he didn't actually have a cup, but he wanted me to ask you about it.
Worm tea. Now, I've heard of making like a compost type
that's
tea with worm, with worm casings.
Yes. It's not something you usually
he didn't
drink.
Actually drink.
So he's not drinking
I'm
this.
Only kidding.
Okay.
He's not normal, but still.
I got it. So then it's basically like the same as, people call it compost tea, you call it cow manure tea.
So what do you do, and why do it?
Well, for one, it's a really great way to fertilize your plants organically. You basically take either fermented worm casings or old compost or even, old cow manure, and you add water, let it in a 5-gallon pail, and you take it out just like you would a synthetic product like Miracle-Gro, only this time it's organic.
And you just water your plants
with it.
So those things have a nutrient value. They have fertilizer, nutrients being released in them all the time.
Yeah.
Like, if you think of manure, well, compost and the worm casings are very similar.
Yeah.
So you can spread that on the ground and it will come out. Or if you want it to happen more quickly, or if you have little seedlings and you can't stuff any compost into that pot,
right,
you make a compost tea. And you water them with it, so you're adding those nutrients that way.
And it's a little harder to burn your crop with it, too. So if you're worried about putting even not completely decomposed manure, it's too raw to be able to use for your crop, it would burn. But if you did put it into water and let it ferment for a little bit and then put it on there, you'd have a mild fertilizer. But if you did that regularly, you'd have a pretty healthy crop.
You
do have to watch your nutrient analysis because you could sometimes get too much nitrogen and sometimes too much like foliage instead of not enough fruit if you're not getting enough potassium or phosphorus in there. But overall, it's a good way. We've grown.
But I wouldn't drink it.
No,
I wouldn't
drink that. It's probably not tasty anyway.
No.
Lucas Willard, on the other hand, came up with a good idea for the show. So bonus points to our Southern Adirondack Bureau Chief.
Cheers to him.
Is it time to plant the corn?
It's a little early. Just a little bit. You didn't do it.
My wife did it. Oh, dear. She did it from seed. Put them in the ground.
If it's a raised bed and
it's not a raised bed.
It's a warm spot.
It's not
at
that
best.
Warm.
You know what I might do if I was concerned?
Well,
I might put some of that floating row cover, that stuff called Rime, right over the garden. And what that does is actually it holds in the heat. It allows the soil to warm up and more quickly than it would otherwise. And if they did start to emerge, you want the soil warm enough so they will actually grow. We don't want them to sit there.
I mean, it seems fairly warm,
then
right?
Then that Rime will protect them for a short period of time, and then it will be time.
Okay. So we'll see what happens. You put a lot of seeds in a relatively small spot, so we'll
get
see
a little happens. Get a little floating row cover and cover it right up and leave it there for a couple weeks.
What about worm tea? Should we use some of that?
When you pull the floating row cover off and the corn is up, get some
wait
worm
till you
tea.
See the green shoots.
Yeah. Last year we did the corn, right? and it was perfect.
Yeah, you had great luck with it.
She did a spectacular job, and it was just getting ready to harvest.
I remember you talking about that.
On vacation for 2 weeks and came back, the deer had eaten all of it.
And they knew they waited for it to, you know, obviously get to perfect ripening and also waiting for you to be out of town. Right. They kind of have the schedule down, and I think now.
I think the word is out among the deer. They're milling around watching now. So we'll
watching her plant the seed.
But I figured out how we can avoid this this year.
And?
Not go on vacation.
Oh, that's true.
Yes. Yeah,
so. Well, that'll do it.
You planted the corn earlier, so if we have a nice warm May, the corn may be ready sooner.
It might be.
Before you go on vacation.
All right. Well, we'll find out. I'll keep you posted. Meantime, our number is 800-348-2551. Let's go to the phones. And Peter and Beacon. Peter, you're on.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Ray. Oh. And this time, I'm only going to ask two questions really quickly.
Okay.
One is, I'm looking for a pink flowering tree. I've got a pink flowering cherry tree in the backyard, but it's full of bees. It's beautiful, but my girlfriend is allergic to bees, so I want to plant a tree in the front yard. I want pink flowering, but I don't want it to attract bees. What do you suggest? Hmm.
Well, flowers attract bees, so you know, it's kind of difficult to have a flowering plant of any kind and not attract some bees. Magnolia there's a pink blooming magnolia, several actually varieties blooming right now, and probably would attract less bees.
That's actually the first thing that came to my mind was the pink flowering magnolia. Some bees, but never seemed to be a real magnet for them.
Right.
So probably less bees than the cherry. Cherries are, they like those a lot.
Okay.
Okay, so magnolia.
Yeah, you want to get something. Yep, go ahead.
Yes, sir.
Go ahead.
Okay. My second question is, when should you? I've got these huge rows of Sharon bushes that have not bloomed yet. Of course, nothing's on them yet, but they're huge, and I should have cut them back. When can you cut back rows of Sharon without killing it for the season? Is it too late?
Well, you know, you sort of have. I've traditionally always pruned them prior to growth, so usually like, you know, a little earlier than where we are right now. I'm assuming that the buds are probably swelling. It might not be too late. Yeah, it might be actually still probably pretty good.
My suggestion is I would say it is definitely not too late.
Yep.
And you could be successful doing it any time in the next several weeks, even as the leaves emerge, because they're blooming on that new wood. They can tolerate being pruned. So today would
these
be great.
These things are like 6 feet tall.
Yep.
How short can I cut them down?
We always like to say, you know, 25-30% of removal of plant parts, absolute most in one session. So, you know, 30% would be probably fairly safe.
Yeah.
There are exceptions to those rules if you have a different type of pruning in mind, like trying to rejuvenate an old shrub and make it new, and you're not worried about having flowers that season, but you're not really in that kind of situation. So with you, I'd say 30%.
Okay, 30%.
Yeah, and you can do that again next year and the year after. So you do that a few years in a row, and it's not going to put on that 30% that you took off this year. It'll put some back, but if you do that over a few seasons, you'll be able to get it is pretty much as low as you'd like it, and not stress the plant out too much either.
All right.
Can I ask one more question, Ray?
Oh, for Pete's sake, Peter. All right, one more.
This is what happened last time. I have a stump in the front yard. I want to take it out. I want to put another tree there. Will a stump grinder grind the stump out enough so that I can put a new tree there?
Not unless you ask them.
This is what I would suggest with tree stumps. If you have to plant in the exact spot, in other words, you don't have any room on the right side of it or the left side of it or front or back of that stump, you have to go right in that spot because we don't have any other room in our front of our house where it can go. If that's the case, then you need to grind it out. If you can go on one side or the other, front, back, left, or right, all you got to do really is just, you know, have them grind it down flush with the lawn or even cut it with a chainsaw a little below grade. And then leaving that rotted stump in there feeds that new tree for years and years and years and years.
Yeah, and I would just make sure is that stump grinding people often just take it down below the grade and walk away because they think they're done. But you need to let him know that you need all of the stump removed from that general area.
Okay, yep. Peter, thanks a lot for the call. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. The number is 800-348-2551. Gardening today, Kelsey in Voorheesville. Kelsey.
Hi there. I had a question about a tree in our backyard. Beautiful tree, love the tree, but the root system is very, very shallow. So, like, when we mow our backyard, We actually had to go in under the entire tree with like a weed whacker instead. Last summer, we had come up with the idea of maybe like regrading the backyard and putting soil over it and then grassing it. This way we can, and then this way we can just regularly mow over it. But someone mentioned that that might kill the tree. Are there certain types of trees that you can't put soil over or like over the root system? Or are we better off just kind of leaving it the way it is and just deal with it?
Well, you know, traditionally, the roots are actually coming up to the surface because it isn't so much a shallow rooted tree. Most tree roots are actually only about a foot or so. The main feeder roots are only about a foot or 15 inches under the surface. Even on huge trees with like oaks that have tap roots, of course, they go down deeper.
Yeah.
But those feeder roots, they're only under the surface a little bit. But you don't usually see them at the surface because there's no opportunity for them. So if you see roots at the surface, that means there's not as much opportunity down low. And what kind of opportunity are we actually talking about? We're talking about water and air. And that means your soil may be a little bit compacted and they're sort of rising to the surface. So if you wanted to cover those roots, you can. There's no tree that you can't cover the roots on. But the magic number is never more than 3 inches of fill over those roots. So if you start to go over the 3-inch mark, then you're going to start to affect the air exchange process and therefore affect the tree's health. And it's not going to be a quick effect. It's going to take 3 to 5 years to see that negative effect. So as long as you're doing 3 inches or less of soil or even mulch, you should be fine. You might want to think about a way to maybe aerate around there, like some kind of an auger, a small auger bit. You can kind of make vertical holes all the way around it. And sometimes that'll let a lot more air and nutrients and water kind of get down deeper, and you may encourage deeper root zone on that tree. And kind of the two is what I'd recommend. Now,
yeah, and I would just add that this tree has done this, and it's going to do it again. So once you add some soil, you make it level, you put some seed down, it'll look great. But within, you know, a few years, you'll find yourself in a similar situation. So you may want to consider not having lawn there. Maybe it's just a little bit of mulch, and it's not a place you have to actually push the mower around.
Our number here is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. It's The Gardening Show. We'll be back. Fox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff with you. It's Gardening Today. Fred Breglia and Greg Ward here to answer your questions. Gentlemen, 3 emails and then back to the phones. This one's from Chris in Cornwall. Chris writes, we have a 50-foot maple growing on a 45-degree slope just yards from our house. The soil is washed away from one side of the tree, exposing the roots on that side. An arborist saw the tree and said it was healthy. He told us 3 things. 1, cut away the strangler roots. 2, just put leaf litter, not topsoil, over the exposed roots. 3, a retaining wall is not necessary. What do you think about those 3 recommendations? And that's from Chris in Cornwall.
Well, I think the leaf litter idea is that, you know, you're going to rebuild that spot. Seems to me if it's seriously eroded, some soil could also be included
help.
In there.
Okay.
The retaining wall, I'm not sure if that means that they're trying to build something to hold the soil in place. That seems awkward if it's a 45-degree slope and you're going to then
build
a wall.
It does. Seems like that retaining wall. It's hard for us to imagine it.
Good answer.
I guess
what was the first question?
I think he said
cut away strangler roots. Yes.
So that means when the soil probably eroded out, it's exposed some of that root system. And he might very well, if he says strangler roots, these are roots that actually literally, exactly what they say, turn and curl around a tree's trunk and start to eventually choke it out. And as time goes on, these girdling roots are strangling roots will kill your plant.
Yeah.
So if he sees them, and now because of the erosion you could see them, it's a good idea to probably cut those out. If they're gigantic, it might be beyond you know, his ability to work on this. But generally, you know, he's probably talking about smaller roots, and you can prune them out. And you might see a little bit of corresponding dieback on a few branches, but you wouldn't notice much.
Right.
And you'd see more health, more of an improvement than not.
All right. This one is from Karen. Karen says, we're putting a swimming pool in our backyard with a surround of bluestone patio. There are huge old Norway spruce trees nearby. I'm worried about the roots being damaged. The pool man says the roots extend to the drip line. but I'm doubting that because I see the roots around my other Norway spruce trees extending out at least 10 feet. What do you think? How far away should the pool and surrounding bluestone be from these trees?
Yep. Well, you know, the physiology of a normal plant tree, it's been there for a while, is their root system. You could definitely consider it being two times the canopy spread.
Two times the canopy spread.
And on trees that have been there for a while, it can go upwards of three times the canopy spread. But if you stay two times away from that canopy spread, that tree is not going to have any problems.
Okay.
If you start to encroach on that, the closer you get to that drip line, the more impact it's going to have. Something like that, I think I would hire an arborist, a certified arborist, ISA certified arborist, to come in and mark parameters of where the excavation, because when you start getting heavy equipment in there, you're going to do more damage. And it's very easy to do damage, quick to do damage, years to undo damage. Sometimes trees will die 3 to 5 years later. So getting in there and getting a consult by a certified arborist is going to be huge. And then if they have to encroach it, they'll actually tell you ways to actually be able to work around trees and not damage roots. Usually arborists are called after the problems occur.
It's like a doctor.
You don't go to a doctor when you're healthy.
Right.
If they have a lot of room to play with, then they obviously do. Getting close to two times.
Now, this one's from Paul in North Adams, and then we'll jump back on the phones. Paul writes, I'd like to break up the monotony of my backyard with some decorative grasses, the kind that grow to 3 or 4 feet tall. My yard, however, is fairly shaded. Any recommendations?
Typically grasses like really sunny locations, certainly the taller ones. So if it's heavily shaded, I don't think I can recommend a tall grass. I can recommend some short grasses or some sedges. So Pennsylvania sedge is pretty fun. Hakonokloa is a really nice little grass that has several colors.
Yeah.
Again, all in that.
But not Japanese knotweed. That'll grow well, but.
Not knotweed.
No, we don't want that.
That looks a little bit too much like bamboo.
Yeah, we don't.
For this guy.
Yeah. But these grasses are fairly short, less than a foot tall. So I'm thinking, we were talking foraging earlier.
Yes.
And ostrich fern, cinnamon fern, nice tall ferns that would very much enjoy that lower light and give you sort of that grass aspect. Ostrich fern comes up quick and is beautiful, tends to brown out by August. Cinnamon fern, interrupted fern, they last all summer.
Speaking of foraging, Fred, you brought ramps.
Yeah, we brought in some ramps. And for those that are listening that don't know what ramps are, they're wild leeks. They're in the onion family, onion garlic. And they're really a good cross between onion and garlic. They grow pretty widespread across eastern North America into Canada. Really big in the south. There's ramp festivals down there.
Yeah.
I've been picking ramps since I was 11 years old. And, literally going back to the same few spots. I've got about 3 or 4 spots over the years that I've harvested from. But the mother spot has been, just huge. And I do tell people, if they are foraging, always 100% know what it is that you're eating.
Right.
If you're not 100%, leave it alone. If you're picking ramps and things like these, it's easy to over-harvest. So there are some tricks I always have tell people that, if you are getting a spot of ramps and you don't have a lot, you know, like to see them grow, you don't have to take the whole plant like I've done with the bulbs here today. You can just take the foliage, and then the plant could regrow and you wouldn't lose the crop. Or you could even take, in some cases, just a single leaf. And the leaves, every part of the ramp is 100% edible, as I'll demonstrate here.
It smells delicious.
You can eat them raw.
Yeah.
You can eat the stems. You can eat the foliage. The foliage sautéed up with a little olive oil. You don't need much else.
You could make it's a foodie's choice. Pesto.
Yeah, ramp pesto. You could definitely do a ramp pesto with that. Be really, really good with the foliage.
And the bulb you got a little spice there. That's nice stuff.
Got a little bit of heat. But, a lot of times people think foraging and it's like, ooh, survival. But you know what? A lot of the restaurants, the chefs, the foodies out there, these are culinary gold mines.
Yeah,
the leaves are a little sharper right now.
Are they?
Yeah.
What do you mean sharp?
Just a little stronger.
The taste?
Yeah. Nice.
All right, let's take a call here. We'll have some ramps and whatnot. Okay. And let's go over to Talia in Amherst. Talia, you're on.
Oh, hi there.
Hello.
Yes, I have a question. So I own a small business, and my dad helps me do all the landscaping. Well, actually, he does all of it. And every year we get into an argument about how much to trim the shrubs. We have, I don't know what the name of the shrub is, but they're just those generic green shrubs that everybody has in front of the bank,
Like an arborvitae?
Boxwood or a yew.
Or a yew.
Or an arborvitae.
Sounds familiar.
Yep.
Yeah, they got like a prickly little needle leaves, and sometimes I think they have red berries
juniper.
On them.
Juniper.
Yeah, we'll go to...
Or
well,
the yew, the red berries.
Yeah, you're mixing your little evergreen. So the juniper would be the prickly one, and the yew yep. would have the red berries.
Yeah.
And you might have both of them. There. Do you guys kind of shear them? When you say cut them, kind of like use like a hedge trimmer type of thing, or are you guys selectively kind of pruning them with actually pruners?
We just shear them.
Okay. Yep.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they've gotten, like, my dad likes them to be really large, and like a couple of them on the side are reaching like almost into the roof, and he shapes them into these oval shapes, and but that we argue every year about, I think they're too large, especially in front of the door. I want them to be cut back more. And he says, well, if I cut them back too much, they're going to die.
They're not going to die, but they're not going to, he may cut into the plant to the point where you have a hole. There's no longer any green foliage.
Right.
And then that hole could persist for a while or possibly indefinitely, depending on how significant you make it.
And also what type of plant. Uh-huh. For example, like if it is a juniper, which it does sound maybe like you have the combination of the two, junipers never refoliate from old wood. So once you cut back to that old wood, like Greg said, that's one of those holes that kind of is somewhat permanent unless you can get another branch to kind of grow over and train it to cover that hole. If it's a yew, you could cut them back fairly substantially and lower them and over time, it would cover those spots because yews typically can regrow from older wood.
So often the landscape, you plant it, you establish it, somewhere around 20 years down the road, a sheared plant can get to its sort of finished life. It's done partly because it's so big that you don't want it there anymore. You want a smaller one. Yep. That could be the reason it's finished. It would keep growing if you didn't do that. So I'm just saying that if you do really want them smaller, it may be, you might want to just consider replacing them.
Okay. Thank you for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Alex in East Hampton. Alex, you're on.
Yes. Hi, Ray. My wife and I are having a heated discussion about whether we should trim our 25 to 30-year-old rhododendrons. We're in western Massachusetts, and they took a beating this winter. I'm looking at the neighbors, and the dieback is on everybody's roadies is probably a good 25%. So should I trim them now before they bloom, or should I wait till they bloom? She would like to see the flowers, of course, but I'd like to do the right thing for the plant.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say that the right thing for the plant is to wait a bit longer to see if that wood is still alive. In other words, the stem may be leafing right out by the end of the month. The flower may actually open and so that your wife can enjoy that. And simply the brown leaves that you're looking at now are the only thing that will need to be removed, or you could let them drop off on their own. They'll even do that by June or July or so. So that's my first bit of advice. If that branch is truly dead, the flowers don't open, nothing sprouts out of it, that would be when you could prune it out.
Yep. And the general rule for rhododendrons across the board is to prune them after they bloom. Same for lilacs. It's generally if the plant looks healthy, you wait till it blooms, and as soon as it's done blooming, that's when you would sort of naturally prune. Anyways, there are exceptions to those rules if you wanted to try to rejuvenate a shrub, but with your rhododendrons, you're not going to be in that case. So more than 25% off at a 30% off at any one pruning session. And do make sure you guys are making good pruning cuts. There's a free resource out there put out by the International Society of Arboriculture. It's called treesaregood.com, and it's factual-based information, so you don't have to worry about opinions. This has been proven through research on how to make cuts and whether baskets should be off and left on and mulching and, good, bad, ugly, and so
trees
forth.
Treesaregood.com.
So and it's a free resource put out by the International Society of Arboriculture. It's also a disclaimer that should somebody disagree with what I say, I often say, hey, you're disagreeing with the facts proven through research through the ISA, not Fred personally.
But no one would ever disagree with Fred, though, right?
It's very rare. It happens once in a great, great, great while, but very rare.
All right, Alex.
Well, once again, my wife is right. But thank you so much for your time, guys.
They usually are. Good luck.
Thanks a lot, Alex. Yes, they are. Our number is 800-348-2551. Fred Breglia is here. And Greg Ward, it's the Gardening Show. And let's go to Lee. Lee, are you really in Colorado Springs, Colorado right now?
Yes, I am.
Well, nice to have you here.
I'm from the Hudson Valley. I'm from Hudson, actually, New York, but I'm visiting my grandkids.
Oh, nice. Well, you're on the radio. Go ahead.
Okay. We have a row of arborvitae lining our driveway and kind of giving us privacy from the road, and the deer have decimated the bottom 5 or 6 feet this year.
Yep.
So we just want to find some kind of a shrub that's absolutely deer-proof that we could plant right in front of those to keep giving us the screen from the, you know, the road. But I looked up barberry, but it's not sold in New York, I guess.
No, it's invasive barberry, and it's actually one of the I've also heard that it's one of the best places for ticks to harbor. It's
really?
A tick magnet, and it is invasive. But you know, arborvitaes grow right back from old wood, so if you just prevent any more damage on those, you could definitely get all those bottoms all green again.
But how do you prevent the deer from coming back?
You're probably going to need you probably need to use like a burlap wrap of sorts, or I've seen people wrap them with burlap.
There's a poly, you know, a fairly heavy duty. Usually it comes 7 foot tall by 100 foot long poly netting. It's like
sold for that.
It's a black netting. You could use it to hold your chickens in but the weasel probably would cut through it. But otherwise, it's used specifically for deer protection, animals in general, but for deer protection. And you would put up some posts and you would attach the netting to the posts. And it's pretty good in the winter because you don't actually see it. You know, you still see your plant through the netting.
Well, that's a plan.
There are like deer be gone kind of homemade concoctions of garlic. I mean, you probably could use ramps. You could definitely use like rotted eggs. But the thing with those products, and they do work, you have to reapply them. And, you know, unless you're out there reapplying them. Otherwise, what I would suggest is just like what Greg said, you know, some kind of poly, or they do make like a really easy type of deer fencing that's made for longer stretches. It's easy to put up. And it goes up, you know, literally in the fall. These deer are never going to browse them in the summer. So it's only a winter injury thing.
Right.
So you can put them in the fall, take them down in the spring. And if you prevent them from one season from getting them, you should have green shrubs again this season.
Yeah, they'll look pretty good by summer. You could sort of nip the tops a little bit, maybe now or when you get back.
Yep.
And then possibly again in July, just cutting back the top that was not eaten just to help the bottoms push a little bit more.
They're like 20 feet tall, so I really can't.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
Get anything off the top.
You don't have to do it.
You don't have to do the nipping part. They will, if you're patient, a couple of seasons, you should be able to, as long as you can prevent further damage, you should be able to get them back. If that's an option, that's what I would personally recommend.
All right, Lee, thank you for the call. Greg, just quickly before the next call, what was all this about chickens and weasels? What was going on?
Well, it was, I'm sorry I didn't let you in on my thoughts there, but the netting to me looks like something you would cage a chicken with, like chicken wire.
Uh-huh.
But it's not metal, it's plastic.
Right.
So wouldn't a weasel be smart enough to chew right through that?
Wouldn't a weasel be smart? That's a good point. Marge, are you in Golden Bridge?
Malden Bridge.
Oh, Malden Bridge. Hi, you're on.
Hi, thank you. I have a very old Britsnest spruce, and it's all brown around the bottom. And I'm just wondering if it's susceptible to that virus that other spruces are getting.
You know, it is a Norway spruce. So it is a Picea abies. So that Norway spruce are getting some of that, much much less severe than Colorado spruce for sure. You seeing any of that, Fred?
A little bit. Not much on Norway, though.
Stressed
and
Norway.
Just to clarify, not a virus. It's actually technically a fungus that, you know, a lot of people are getting.
Okay.
So I'm assuming that's what we're
okay.
We're
doing.
Yep. And so more than likely.
Yeah, whatever the disease, horrible disease is.
Right. More than likely what you're seeing is that the plant has gotten, as you said, you've had it a long time, has gotten to a place where some of those older branches or in general is getting a little tired. Maybe it's you know, doesn't have enough room to grow anymore. It's possible. I mean, I keep wanting to say maybe it got a little dry last year, but of course that didn't happen in the fall. You know, so you're just going to need to prune some of that out. I'm going to ask you, the top of the plant looks good, or is it a little bit in just the
mostly
bottom? Yeah. So it's growing upward.
Two, and one of them I cut a whole bunch of the under branches out because it was too. I didn't like the shape of it, so yeah. I turned it into some other kind of a creature. But this other one, I was also thinking it could be. I have a new lawnmower. Maybe the exhaust is on that side, and it damaged it last year. But
certainly possible.
But it has a few brown spots. They always get a few little brown spots here and there. But
is it getting more shade now than it used to? More shade, about the same.
I think it's just the older branches. You know, those are the older branches. They're finishing off, you know, like it would if it was a full-size tree. They do sort of self-limb a little bit.
Yeah.
You're just seeing that.
All right. Well, we have to take a break. Marge, thanks for the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Greg Ward is here. Fred Breglia is here. We'll be back. Welcome back to our show. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. It's The Gardening Show, and Greg Ward is here. Fred Breglia is here. You are there. We'll get back to your calls in a moment. This email came in from Josh. Josh says, we have a fireplace in our yard. My wife would like to remove the fireplace and plant a tree in the same spot. Will the ashes in the soil have any impact on the new tree?
It's a good question.
They could raise the pH. It could have raised the pH of the soil in that spot.
Yeah.
I think I would recommend planting on like left, right, front, or back. Kind of like that tree stump question.
Yeah.
Unless you really had to plant right in that spot, I think I would tend to fill that with soil and make it more like lawn because the lawn likes the alkaline condition that the ash would create. So you'd probably have a real easy time putting seed there. And I think that if you just got a little bit to the left, right, front, or back, you'd have more of a normal pH. I think years of being in the fire pit.
Yeah.
Initially, I think his pH would probably be a little bit askew. You might see some funky growth or have a hard time getting that plant established.
This one's from Deb in Knox. We have several PG hydrangea bushes with dead blooms from last year. Should I deadhead them? Or will they just fall off? What's PG? Is it praise God?
Paniculata grandiflora.
All right, those PG hydrangea. Should she deadhead?
Well, deadheading them now is only aesthetic, so it has no actual value. So, in case anyone's wondering what deadheading your plants are, we're not talking about taking these guys to Grateful Dead shows. We're talking about actually taking those spent flowers off before they go to seed. And once they've gone to seed, like she's seeing last year's spent flower heads, it's an aesthetic thing at this point. Where really the main reason to deadhead is to get the spent flower off before it produces seed, and therefore you're going to get more blooms. All that energy that would normally go to seed is now going to blooms and normal growth.
Right.
So it's aesthetics. If you want to get them off, she could. Otherwise, I think I'd wait till after this year spent flowers and then just do a general deadheading of the plant.
However,
go ahead.
I would say that. So all PG hydrangea, all these panicle hydrangeas grow out tremendously.
Yeah.
Reducing them now, this month, cutting them back significantly, which would remove the spent flowers, also helps create sort of a large flush with large new flowers that I think makes the plant look better than it would if you left everything intact with all the last year's growth on there. So it's sort of like rose bushes you cut back and they bloom more aggressively. So do panicle hydrangeas.
Right. You know, most of the deadheads I know went to seed about 1977, oddly enough. This one's from Teresa in Ulster County. Please ask your guests to recommend bee-friendly plants for the garden. Bee-friendly plants for the garden.
Many plants are bee-friendly. Certainly. Right now, what's going to come into bloom any minute, crab apples are as a tree, a small flowering tree. Not only bees, but you get the warblers when you get the crab apples.
Yep. And I always think of, if you think of pollinators and bees, you don't just want something that's coming in the spring. You'd like to kind of, ideally have a seasonal type bloom. So something that's early spring, and late spring, early summer, late summer, midsummer. And that way those pollinators have those plants. So think about multiple ones. But, some of my favorite are like the red vein Nicoianthus. Really neat plant.
Yeah.
Clethora, any of the Clethora summer sweets. Those shrubs are just really, really sweet, and they're like magnets for bees, butterflies. Lilacs are really good, too. Crab apples are always going to be good.
Bee balm works great.
And then there's lots of perennials,
Tons of perennials.
Right now, spring ephemerals are just coming into bloom. So if you're out there foraging the ramps, you can also be walking by, trout lily, bluebead lily,
some of the woodland anemone are out.
Dutchman's breeches was a little dicentra, a little bleeding heart. All of these things are coming into bloom now. They don't bloom all summer, and they, like the ramps, they'll disappear for the most part. Some of the foliage will stay. They'll disappear, though, by midsummer. But for the late April, early May garden that will attract pollinators, they're pretty fun.
All right, back to the phones we go, and let's go to Kathy in Highland Lake, New Jersey. Kathy, you're on.
Hi. Yes, thank you. I had a bed of irises about 4 feet by 6 feet. That used to have about 20 irises. And last year, very few came up. And this year, again, I see maybe 4 shoots. And now grass is even starting to grow over the bed because there's almost nothing there. What could account for these missing irises, and what should I do? Are they under the ground there, or what?
So this, you know, this bed is sort of running its course. It peaked with all of those great, you know, blooms you saw a couple of years ago. And some form of renovation of that garden is what you're going to need to do next, especially if grass is moving in there. So, you know, I always like to edge the bed first to redefine the bed that it is. Then I would go through, and actually it'd be a great time to dig up all of the irises you can see, dig up all the space that you can't see irises to see if there's anything in there, but probably not if you don't see them by now. Add some compost to that soil and then replant the irises you have. Add to that if you want to. When you're doing all that, you should be able to figure out possibly if the irises just faded away and there's old sort of rotten tissue in there, tubers, or if you had some rodent damage in there.
How about borers? Should we look for borers?
Yeah, so if they're these German iris, the ones with the sort of very large bulbous tubers, they can succumb to things like borer, and that's what would have slowly defeated the bloom time or the bloom show. When you dig up the bulb, you'll see if it's firm and alive, or if it's sort of soft and brown. You can at this point, I don't think you would notice any specific worms in there, any little borers, but you would notice that they had been through it. There'd be some holes.
I would notice if it was, as you said, something about brown and soft.
So
it'd
be great to know which ones they are. But yeah, when you dig up if it's a German iris and you dig up the tuber, you have the tuber that the leaves are coming out of, and that will be in good shape, you know, firm and hard, sort of like some a ginger, you know, bulb of ginger.
Okay.
And attached to it, or barely attached to it, will be some older material that is brown and soft and may have some holes in it.
Oops. Kathy, thank you for the call. Let's now go over to Laura in Salt Point. Laura, you're on. Hello? I'll try it again. Laura in Salt Point, are you there? Yeah, that's not one. Are you there, Laura? Hello? Laura, are you there?
We could probably answer her question anyways.
Laura wants to know about her hydrangeas not blooming.
Yeah, you know, most of the time, we don't have her on the line, so we can't confirm this.
That's
but we would, Greg and I think
Hi,
would agree.
Can you hear me now?
Oh, there she
Hello,
is.
Well, welcome to the show, Laura.
Hello.
Sorry.
It's all right.
I'm trying to garden as you're talking to me, and I hit the mute button by accident.
Gardening well, while cell phone.
That's
use.
A good excuse. You're
That's
on.
A good
Go
one.
Ahead.
So listen, I have a hydrangea that I purchased about, it's got to be 8 years ago. I bought it at a local garden center, so assumed it would be meant for our area. I don't know if I'm zone 5 or 6, but at any rate, I've planted it. It didn't bloom for a couple years. I moved it thinking it was the, you know, lack of sun or too much sun. I've moved it about 4 times now. And finally, I went back and read the literature, and it said that it was really not meant for my zone. It was for one zone below me.
Yep.
So I brought it to Long Island, which is the zone that it said on the literature,
Great.
And I planted it there.
Oh. Mm.
Is there, and it's been years since it's been 2 years at least, that I've had it down there. It's got gorgeous foliage, but it never blooms. Is there any hope?
Are you doing any spring pruning? Are you cutting it back in the spring or the fall?
I have not.
Okay.
So we're assuming this was a blue or pink kind of round pom-pom, you know, mop head type. And those will bloom on old wood. So pruning them back is going to remove the bloom. So if you're not pruning them back, then you have
the... No, I've never pruned them back.
So the next thing to look at is, where is the new growth coming from? Are the stems, all the woody stems that you do have that were left over from fall, are they sprouting, or is the growth coming from out of the ground directly, sort of brand new shoots out of the ground?
Well, that's a good question, because I'm not in Long Island right now, so I'm not looking at the plant. But I'm pretty sure it's coming from the old wood.
So I've pretty much run out of reasons for it not to bloom.
Okay.
I think you got, you know, you might have a dud there.
Oh.
You know, you don't move it anymore. I would definitely go back and check. The only other thing I can sort of throw at you, if it's growing on new, on the old wood and it's coming up, you should actually start to be able to see flower buds coming out of the new growth. A couple of leaves, you peel them back, you see a bud there. And it's sometimes, and I don't know, I don't remember last year in Long Island, but sometimes they leaf out and then we get a good frost, and they're very susceptible. Those flower buds are very susceptible to a frost. The plant regrows and you never know, but all the flower buds are dead.
But you wouldn't notice any damage on the green foliage. It would look perfect. And most likely that is, you know, since we've ruled out most everything else, that probably is the culprit.
So there's still hope then.
You could even like take it a step further and try to put some burlap screen around it just to protect maybe some of that winter winds from hitting it. I mean, it's in Long Island. It should be able to handle that.
It's tropical down there.
It certainly is. Yeah. But
It is near the coast, so we're on the south shore, but not right on. We're a block away.
I think you got to check for buds this year and whether, you know, and just then call us back.
Okay. Well, thank you, Laura. Good luck. You can go back to mute now. And let's go on over to Ruby in Amherst. Ruby, you're on.
Hi there, and thank you. A few weeks ago, I went to a grafting class, and I have 12 pieces of root base. I think it's from the dwarf. It is a dwarf root base. It's about 12 inch long. It's in the garage, and above, we grafted about 5-6 inches of different apple varieties. And my question is how to better or best plant them in planters, since we may move in a year.
Okay.
And how to keep the plant.
And these are apples?
Yes.
Yeah. And you want to avoid planting them basically in the ground to avoid having to transplant them later, because you may be moving. So you could keep them alive in nursery containers.
Yeah.
I mean, that would not be very hard to do.
So you could get a, you know, what would be considered a 2 or 3 or 5 gallon plastic container, some you know, potting soil that is compost based, something that has some life to it that's going to last a little while, and plant them. And if you haven't planted them, if they're bare root, you want to do it now. This is the time to get them in the some ground, whether it's a container or your yard.
Yep. Try not to over plant too deep. Make sure that the roots, the place where the stem kind of meets the roots, that you want that kind of right at ground level. You don't want to, you know, not like a tomato plant where you want to plant it a little extra deep. That creates more problems with trees. So just make sure that the grade where the stem meets the roots are kind of right at the ground, right at the grade of the container. You're going to want to use a little bit of fertilizer if you're going to probably use a container. So some kind of some slow release type of product that you can put on top of the container,
or some Plantone or even tree tone. You can work in any of those general purpose organic.
Make sure that the media that you use, like Greg mentioned, a compost media, I've seen, and all composts are created equal. So in an ideal world, you're going to be able to have some drainage to that. Sometimes I see them, they're really heavy soil, and plants don't do really good in containers because it's just so heavy. It's not enough, maybe bark chips in there or stuff.
Right.
So any reputable nursery center, though, is whatever they're using, you could just buy enough of it. I would just go to, you know, what are you guys using? Okay, I buy some from you? Sure.
All right. It
usually works out really easy.
Ruby, thanks for the call. Let's go to Kendall in Niskayuna. Kendall, you're on.
Hi, thank you so much. I have 5 or 6 very mature rhododendrons. They've been here since we bought the house. I am not a gardener on any level. This was not that bad of a winter here, but I looked up online and it seems like I have a fungus on the rhododendron. My roots are very soft and squishy. I definitely have poor drainage, even though I'm up on a hill. So I started to, you know, try to investigate a little bit, and the branches are clearly dead. The twirling of the rhododendron leaf has not reopened in the majority of the bushes. Right. I'm just wondering if I'm correct, and I do have this fungus, are the bushes salvageable?
So the fungus would that you're referring to, Phytophthora, I think it would occur during the summer, and you know, summer, late summer. That's when it would be, the tree or the shrub would be infected. That's when the damage would be noticeable. And so in September, those leaves would have not been good looking, and the plant would have had that downturned leaf with all curled up. If they looked great in September, October, November, you do not have the fungus. You have winter kill.
Okay.
So winter kill.
So do I?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
It's something that we talked about earlier with another caller, and it you need to decide whether the stems are completely dead. So that wood where the curled leaves are hanging, you could do a little scratch test. Take your pocket knife or your thumbnail, if you don't mind, and scratch the wood and see if it's green underneath. If it is, in fact, green underneath, what we told the other fellow was to do nothing yet, just to wait, see if they don't put out some new buds with new leaf shoots coming out. The flowers may or may not be viable, but if you see some new leaf buds forming, then you're good, and they're going to regrow. Those brown leaves will eventually fall off. If there's some dead wood, in other words, the first foot or so of the plant on the top is dead, but the buds are coming out at the second foot or a little farther down, then you'll be pruning down to those buds.
Perfect.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for the call. We only have about 30 seconds here. Mark in Stockbridge. Mark, you have about 10 seconds to pose the question. I apologize.
All right. I've got a mature butternut tree that's been suffering due to some root damage. I'm thinking probably about 7 or 8 years ago. Doesn't seem to have the dreaded butternut canker. I'm wondering if there's anything I can do besides adding those few inches of topsoil that you mentioned earlier in the show, any kind of fertilizer.
All right.
A granular fertilizer that's balanced and organic applied this time of year, it could help. I would not put a lot of fertilizer because you're not trying to induce tons of growth, just trying to create a stable growing condition. You know, I think otherwise put that topsoil you had mentioned and try to keep the plant from undergoing stress, and, you know, you should be okay.
All right, Mark, that is where we will have to leave it. Thank you, Greg Ward. Thank you, Fred Breglia, for being here. Support comes from Careers in Transition, LLC, Albany. Dr. Tom Denham, providing individual career guidance, career testing, job strategies, interview preparation, LinkedIn lessons, resume and cover letter writing, accepting new clients, careersintransitionllc.com. Paul Smith's College, where winter sports athletes compete on the same landscape that's a training ground for Olympic athletes. Paul Smith's College, it's about the experience. paulsmiths.edu. Flatbrook & Company, a design and build firm serving the WAMC listening area, working to help transform homes and cultivate living spaces, kitchen and aging in place specialists, flatbrookandco.com. And Watercolors by Edith, Shutesbury, Massachusetts. Edith Hunsberger, a painter in acrylic and watercolors, specializing in portrait paintings of people and pets from photographs. Edith-Hunsberger.artistwebsites.com. Thanks again to Greg Ward and Fred Breglia for being here. Thank you for listening and for the great calls. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Dina Salzman answered the phones. And Jim Lavoulis is our producer. Tomorrow it's Food Friday. We talk beer and beer history with the team from Albany Ale Project. Right now, stand by for the Capital Connection.